witches, and welcome to Witch Space. I'm Gemini.
And I'm Scorpio. And for today's new moon, new book, we have The Evil Eye, The History, Mystery, and Magic of the Quiet Curse by Antonio Pagliarulo. And this is a new book. This came out last year, 2023.
I love when we do new books.
Yeah. You know what I noticed? I noticed that, like, I listened to, like, some comedy podcasts. And I've noticed that everybody introduces themselves like, this is who we are. And we never do that. We just jump right in like as though everybody knows who we are.
I feel like hi, what's up, witches? This is Gemini. I'm a witch. Right? Like, what do I even say?
No, but it'd be like, you know, we're two witches from Lower Hudson Valley that come to you twice a month where we discuss the history of witchcraft through the books. And we also discuss topics that are important to the modern day witch. Like something like that.
Did you just make that up right now?
Yeah, I did.
That was good. That was good.
Okay, so maybe we're going to start with that, like with other episodes. Just saying. I'm not saying we should go back and change them all. But it's just something that I realized where I'm like,
yeah,
hey, you know, if you're new, that's who we are.
That actually would be cute because then it's like, that's who we are. And now, Scorpio, tell us about who wrote the book.
So who is Antonio? His bio says he's the son of Southern Italian immigrants and was raised in a home where the magical arts were commonplace, and you can find him at antoniopagliarulo.com. So if you like him, find him. And by the way, I have a couple of quotes. I have a quote that I really liked from the end of the book, but it doesn't make sense to talk about it now. So I'm going to have two quotes that I like really, really love.
I love it.
Okay. So the first quote that I have, and we can go back to the introduction, but it's actually from chapter one. It's, what is the evil eye? So if we're going to talk about a book on the evil eye, I thought, well, let's just, I want to say his definition.
Yeah.
So this is what he says. It's a baneful force transmitted through a stare or glance, and it can be delineated in three distinct ways. The eye is accompanied by a compliment or praise. Oh, there's two. There's no hiding. The person is willing to do, like, be really out about it, like, really, like, in your face about it. Or It can be unintentional.
Yeah, let's do it, right? I like the idea. He says, the idea that a single glance can cause harm is alive and well today. And, like, my immediate thought when I'm thinking about that is like social media. Because, and I didn't read the article. I read the headline of the article, but I saw an article that I wanted to read and didn't. That was like, we weren't supposed to see our faces this much. That mirrors didn't exist. Right. And even when mirrors were like first invented and first being used, they were bad. Right, they were like, oh, here's the general shape of me. Here's like a vibe of what I look like. So we in 2024, in modern times, we are able to see ourselves and other people are able to see us to a degree that no other human has ever been able to. And so, yeah, the idea that a single glance can cause harm feels incredibly poignant right now, because not only can people from across the world see you on the internet, but you are seeing yourself to a degree that no other person has ever seen themselves before. And like, are we giving ourselves the evil eye?
You know, that's a really good point, because I think I've mentioned this before. I had a friend in college who always had a camera with her, and she would be, I mean, I don't know how much money she spent on film and developing the film and all that. And I said, you're absolutely out of your mind. What are you doing with all these pictures of us? Because literally, what do you need to see us all the time for? And when you think about it now, we take pictures of ourselves like it's nothing, right?
I probably took like 5 or 6 in the last hour.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like not a big deal. I never thought about it that way, that humans never really saw themselves as much as we're seeing ourselves.
You didn't see yourself unless you had money and a painter painted you.
Right.
And that guy was an artist, so he painted you hot.
Right. Right.
Like this, I, The problem is I'm saying it right now, and this isn't like a thing that I thought about before we started the podcast. So now I'm like, because, yeah, one of the ways that you can get the evil eye is fully unintentionally. Are we evil eyeing ourselves when we are this visible?
I don't know that we're evil eyeing ourselves, but I think we're putting ourselves out there because, I mean, spoiler for the end of the book, he does tell you how to do the evil eye on somebody.
Yes.
And one of them is with a photo. So I'm pretty sure this would work if you had someone's picture on your phone. You could do the evil eye on somebody.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Okay, so let's talk about, before we get there, and that could be our last discussion, I guess, as or have we all, because I had a lot of feelings about this. A lot of feelings yes. about the evil eye. So anyway, so that's just like what he talks about. You know, the evil eye exists everywhere, whether it's called the evil eye or it's called something else. It's every culture. It's every religion. You know, this is not like a witch thing or, you know, just like he says he's Italian, comes from Italian immigrants. It's not an Italian thing. It's just a thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So what are some of the ways you can get the evil eye? Why am I laughing? Okay. I'll explain. So one of the ways is like if someone gives you a compliment, right? And he says, if you want to like kind of deflect the evil eye, like if somebody says something to you, they compliment you. Oh, that's a really pretty dress you have on. You know, you want to deflect that. You could say, oh, if only I hadn't torn a little bit of it, you know, this morning, you know, or yeah. And I spilled whatever, or, oh, I would really be enjoying this dress more if I hadn't tripped. My ankle really hurts. It's like your life can't be too good. Right. So if somebody's envious of the dress and you go, oh, I wish I could enjoy wearing it, but unfortunately I fell. Now the person, why? Okay, you just made a face. What?
Oh, no. I did just make a face and I'm doing it again. I'm so sorry.
Why?
Do you know what group of people typically are more self-deprecating and minimizing when they accept compliments?
No, who?
Women. And do you know what group of people have been encouraged, especially in the last 20 years, 30, you know, modern time, to stop doing that and to just accept compliments more readily? Women.
So you're saying now that women are going to have the evil eye put on them?
I'm saying I would like to look at the data to see if there's an increase in women getting the evil eye.
But men accept compliments.
Now.
That would mean that they would have the evil eye on them all the time.
Okay, but also I would believe that. I would believe that men have the evil eye on them all the time. Like that wouldn't, I would believe that.
So the thing with a compliment, getting back to the book. The thing with the compliment is even if someone's being nice, it's not necessarily the words that people are using. It could be how they feel about it. Like, oh, it's a really nice dress. But in the back of their mind, they're going, that bitch, where'd she get the money for a dress that nice? Right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, this really nice thing is not so nice anymore. So it's the hidden energy, right? That's the eye in that case. But then there's also people who don't hide it. They're willing to say things like, you know, they don't like you. They're willing to be combative, you know. And someone who's combative is like, they're just going to let it fly. And then there's also the unintentional. And that, he says, comes from like, if you're really braggy. That's the other thing. You can be braggy.
Yeah.
Because you're almost like asking people to mess with you. And he gave an example about this couple who had worked really hard. They finally bought their home. I don't know if they got married or they just lived together, whatever. But they finally had a home. And they decided after a while, like they had worked on the house, like everything was beautiful, to invite people over. And it was after that dinner party that I don't remember what happened, but it was like a million things went wrong in the house. They started fighting with each other. It's like anything that could go wrong did go wrong until they finally realized, wait a minute, this was the evil eye. And once they put a protection on the home, it stopped.
There's a line in the book, and I don't know what chapter it is, but I feel like it's nearby there, where he talks about how his grandmother said that the worst thing that you could do is have a baby shower. Which on the one hand, I'm like, girls, don't say that. You need people to buy you gifts. Babies are expensive. But on the other hand, I'm like, yeah, I completely understand when you're reading these stories and when you're looking at what he's saying, like for I would like to say most people, having a baby is a really big deal. And the idea that that something that is supposed to be a celebration could put that in jeopardy is a really frightening concept.
My mother told me the baby shower for me happened, I think, 2 weeks before she gave birth. They literally waited till the very end because of this feeling of something could go wrong. And then a cousin mm-hmm. of mine had her baby shower. I think she was 5 months pregnant, 6 months pregnant. She lost a baby.
That's horrifying.
That is absolutely That's so scary. Horrifying. Yeah, she had like the crib set up, everything. Like they just got everything and put it in the room. And when she was in the hospital, the family went and they took everything down. So when she came home, it wasn't there anymore, which was good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so, I mean, is that the evil eye? I'm not saying that's the evil eye. I'm just saying that's terrible things that happen. So, you know, some people, I come from a family, my mother's side of the family is incredibly superstitious. Like I was reading mm-hmm. about all the amulets and talismans and I'm like, I got all of those because I got those when my grandmother passed away. My grandmother had mm-hmm. a ton of things that she wore and a lot of the things were the ones there. So, you know, ones mentioned in the book, I mean, so yeah, there are a lot of things and the not telling, I mean, think about it. We even say it now. Don't tell people when you're pregnant until after the first yeah. trimester. There's a reason for that. People, yeah, you don't know.
And it's so tough because on the one hand, I'm like, fuck that. If I'm going through what is one of the most tragic and upsetting things that could possibly happen, on the one hand, I want the people that I love and care about to be able to be there for me. I don't want to go through it alone.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I sit there and I'm like, yeah, it would really suck to like have to go to work and have told all my colleagues and then be like, never mind, guys, I'm having a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
But I'm at work. So it's even when he's talking about like, don't be braggy, don't. There's a comment where he's like, in my family, my siblings were told never to like tell people too much, that we were supposed to play everything close to the chest mm-hmm. because of this superstition. On the one hand, I'm like, that sucks. Like, that doesn't build community. But then on the other hand, we're not really doing a great job of building community now. On a larger scale, right? America is probably its most insular that it's ever been. People are the most atomized they've ever been. And I'm out here being like, oh yeah, keeping shit to yourself doesn't really sound like community building. Like, the evil eye feels really difficult to navigate because it feels at on one hand like a visceral fear passed down from your ancestors, and on the other hand it feels kind of silly.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. But you know, I never really think about the evil eye, but when he was talking I'm like, yeah, like, okay, so you knew when I applied to grad school again. But I didn't tell people.
Yes.
Right? I told very few people. One, mm-hmm. I didn't want to have to tell people I didn't get in. Two, what if after all this time I couldn't cut it? Then that's mm-hmm. really embarrassing. So it wasn't until I was like, I think it was until my advisor was like, yeah, this is a good project at the end, that I would tell everybody, guess what I've done the last 2 years, right? This is where I've been. That. This is the school I went yeah. to. And then my social media on graduation was like, suck at everybody, this is where I got my master's from mm-hmm. again. So, you know, so it's kind of like a fine line. What do you want me to yeah. tell you? You know, he talks about, he asked the question, when was the last time you felt jealous, to see if like you could realize, you know, that people, you have it in you type of thing to like yeah. have that. And my notes were like, how does it feel when folks are jealous of you, right? He's like, ask yourself, when was the last time you felt jealous? And how does it feel when folks are jealous of me? And of course, I'm looking at it now and I'm cracking up. I'm like, I'm a Scorpio, pretty much used to it. People are always trying to, you know.
Even... I love when people are jealous of me.
Yeah.
I don't think for me it happens that as much as it happens for you. I feel like it happens for you all the time. I feel like...
That you know all the stories.
I'm not going to discuss it any further, right. But I feel like people are jealous of you constantly. I don't think that happens to me as much, but like if I know... that a person is jealous of me? Forget it. I am unstoppable. I am unstoppable. You cannot fuck with me, not one bit. Another human being looked at me and was like, I'm mad because I want what she has. You can't tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing.
You know what's my favorite thing to do? You can tell when I know someone's jealous of me because I won't make a lot of eye contact with them. I do this. Like, well, people can't see me, but like I'm looking all over the place. I do that anyway when I talk because I'm in my head like thinking about what I'm going to say. But I do it more. Do you know why I do it? Because if I'm looking around, people get distracted and then I see them looking at my shoes. They look at my nails. But what they don't realize is that I'm looking at you from the corner of my eye. It may look like I'm looking up, but I'm looking right at you. And I'm seeing exactly what it is that's caught your eye. And I see your expressions when you're looking at me. So this whole idea of somebody who like you think likes you, that, you know, is like in your corner, but you're seeing the jealousy manifest. Yeah. Or you mention something you did on a weekend, or you went somewhere, you did something, and you see the expressions change, but you're not going to see it if you look right at them. So that's a clue. If you guys want to see if someone, if you're saying something, you're like, are they really jealous? Start talking, be really animated, like look around, but out of the corner of your eye, keep your eye on them, but make it look like you're not looking at them. You're going to see their expression shift from smiles to kind of like, you know what I mean? So just that's a little something. One of the things that I liked about this book is that he takes us through history with it. And I was fascinated to see that he went as far back as Plato and Euclid.
Yes. Like, loved it.
What? Like, that was fascinating to me.
First of all, the history in this book is so good. Right. I think that's one of the reasons I like it so much, is going through like all of the different cultures and talking about all the different stuff. I obviously had a lot of opinions about the Plato and Euclid. This idea of intromission versus extramission. This idea that like lasers are shooting from your eyes, or like light is bouncing into your eye. And as I was reading about it, I was thinking about how you always say that like magic is science we don't understand yet, and is spiritual extramission the like equal and opposite reaction of the physical? Spiritual intromission? Which one is which?
I don't remember. I don't think I wrote it down.
Ah, okay. Spiritual extramission. So the one where the lasers shoot out of your eyes, right, is the spiritual laser eyes, the equal and opposite reaction to the physical light comes into your eyes and you perceive it.
That's a good point.
Because, and he talks about it in the book, like you can tell if somebody's staring at you.
Yeah, you can feel it.
You can feel that shit.
So there's something to it.
Yeah. I mean, experientially.
Yeah.
Experientially. Yeah.
I also liked what he said about the reason behind the evil eye, like the idea that there's a limited amount of good. Right. So if I have the good, that means there's less good. Not really. We're just saying what, you know, he's trying to explain what people think.
This was like the thought process.
Right. Yeah. So if I have the good, then that means you have less good than I do, because I'm kind of like hogging up the good. So that's where like jealousy's come in, because there isn't enough good for everybody. So that's the premise. The idea that there's a limited amount of good. If certain people are hogging the good, then that means only bad is coming at me. And why should I have bad? So you should have a little bit of bad so I can have a little bit of good.
And I read that sentence and I was like, yeah. But now that I'm hearing you say it, I'm like, that's kind of true.
What do you mean?
Like, I am fully one of those people that's like, we can all live happy, peaceful lives, and there's like enough to go around, and et cetera, et cetera. The overpopulation is a myth, stop perpetuating it kind of thing. But also, when we're looking at this historical development, like, that wasn't wrong. There was only so much food. There were only so many acres of farmland. Like, there were only so many homes that weren't going to get lit on fire when a volcano erupted. Like, during the development of human history, that was a fundamental reality for people. What I'm realizing in talking to you about this is that I feel like a lot of the evil eye, a lot of the difficulty I have, right, that the two hands of like, this is a visceral ancestral fear and it's a little bit silly. The a little bit silly part comes from modernity, comes from the fact that like, I'm not living through the kind of experiences that my ancestors were that would make me feel paranoid, right? That I'm living in like the imperial core of America and everything's pretty okay for me. I don't feel the fear of losing what I have to the degree that like my Irish ancestors might have.
Right. And it did seem pretty random at that point. Like,
yeah,
things just happen. So it's like, well, if my neighbor's doing well, then I guess the bad luck is going to come to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I can understand why they would feel that way.
Sure. Yeah, that I see what you're saying. It's kind of sad when you think about it that way.
And it's also like, it is coming from a place of privilege for me to be thinking that.
Yeah.
Because there are people around the world who are not anywhere near as comfortable and who are experiencing things that feel random and are experiencing trauma and tragedy and might, and like, I'm like, oh, this feels silly. Like, I think I might just be not the target audience. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Mal de ojo, which he mentions in the book, which is really just literally ill for the eye is what it translates to. It's the evil eye. So for me, I don't know that we'd really use the term in my house, particularly mal de ojo, but there was, like I said, like this idea of don't tell people good things, like wait, you know, all this idea of like the superstition. So that is about the same idea, the principle of the evil eye.
I wear an evil eye every day.
Yeah.
I started wearing it when I was pregnant and I have never taken it off. Like, I don't know. Someone in the foreword, I read the foreword on this book. I don't remember who wrote the foreword. But in the foreword, this person defines magic as a conscious harnessing of magical energy in order to achieve a goal, and that magical energy is naturally occurring current of energy that circulates throughout the universe. And sometimes I come into these books and I'm like, I have never thought, I feel like I've never thought about how any of this works a day in my life.
Right.
And then at the same time, I have thought about it too much.
Right.
So it's almost like I'm thinking about how like, okay, laser eyes, that's really cool. Okay, the historical development of the evil eye, that's really cool. But when it comes down to thinking about like, how do I relate to it? How does it work in my own life? I'm almost like not even doing that.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just so, sometimes it's so academic that I'm missing part of the story. And I think that's one of the reasons I like listening to you.
Okay.
Because it like grounds that.
Okay. Well,
does this make sense?
You can listen to me talk about this. So
yes,
he talks about the fact that folk magic is about recognizing the resources in your natural environment and making magic out of those resources. And then he goes on to say, when our ancestors had the threat of the evil eye or anything else for that matter, they didn't have Google. They didn't have anywhere to go. They had to figure out, what do I have? What makes sense? And they put it together. And I think that is so valuable. And I think that's what we've always said on Instagram when you do the sit and spells, right? This whole idea of what's around you, what can you make into a spell? It's about the correspondences to you, what makes sense to you. Because it's true. Like people say, well, I want a spell book. Well, somebody was the first person who said, all right, I don't have anything. I don't know anybody. But I bet you, because this is good for the, I mean, I feel like this is the year where everything comes back to Dracula. So, I tell my students, why do vampires hate garlic? Because there was a time when people believed that if you had garlic, a mosquito wouldn't bite you. You rubbed yourself a little bit of garlic. And what is a vampire if not a blood-sucking, a larger mosquito? So that's why garlic, it all comes from like folk traditions of things, you know, what makes sense to them. So the same thing here, like it should make sense to you. So I'm glad that he said that, because I just hope that people can see that and go, you know what? No one's ever used blank with blank for this, but if it works for you, if it makes sense to you, do it. That's how magic is born. And then, of course, he goes into, you know, Islam, Judaism, mal de ojo. Like, he just goes into all the different. And that, to me, was fantastic because I never thought of it as all combined. He also explained the spitting. And he used the film.
Yes!
He used the film My Big Fat Greek Wedding. But I, of course, thought of Nadja from Antipaxos, from What We Do in the Shadows. And she's like, five spits for an enemy. Puit, puit, puit. And I just think it's so funny. But I never really understood what it meant. So he explains it, right? It's to remove the evil eye. It's imitating spitting, even though a little bit of spit's going to come out when you pretend to. It's to protect and ward against the evil eye. And I thought that was fantastic. Then he talks about the difference between amulets and talismans. I don't know if anybody ever wondered.
Which was very helpful.
Yeah. So an amulet provides defense from negative energies and situations. Talismans grant positive energy to the individual wearing it. And I like things that are both.
Agreed.
By the way, he mentions the Asabacha stone.
Yes! I was going to talk about it because Scorpio got an Asabacha for Baby Bat. And it was very sweet. And I was going to say stapled. What is that thing that it's on?
It's on a pin.
It's not a staple. It's on a pin. I pinned it to their one. Listen. English is my only language and I still struggle with it, okay?
So what did you pin it to? Because you never told me if you ever used it.
Yes, of course I did. I pinned it to their onesies or like their swaddle for a little bit. And then I had it pinned on the shelf over where I did their diaper changes. And then we moved and it's in a box. It's in a box now.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you could put that anywhere.
So what is an Asabache stone?
So an Asabache...
For the listeners.
So it wards off the evil eye. And honestly, did I even use the term evil eye with you? I think I just said it's like a protector.
No.
It just keeps like bad stuff away. And they say if it cracks, that means that somebody did try to do something. You just got another one. So that's something that's done in my family every time a baby's born. And it's always put on a pin because, and here's the other thing, no one's supposed to see it. Mm-hmm. So no one's supposed to know the baby's protected. Meanwhile, I'm sorry, I just assumed every Latino child is protected because I can't fathom, especially Cuban children. Like, yes, Cuban children are probably the most protected against the evil eye that I have ever known. My great-grandmother got a huge Asabache. I have it. It's a necklace. It's a pendant from my mother. And she put it on a long chain because the Asabache was to go on top of the stomach. So that was jewelry, right? So that was okay because my mother didn't go around saying, this is a huge-ass Asabache. I've never seen one that size. But I'm pretty much sure that every Cuban who saw her knew that this was a protection for the baby. And I remember I would ask my mom because I would, you know, love to play in her jewelry box. And I'm like, Ma, how come you never wear this? And she goes, because that's not mine. She said, that's yours. She goes, but you're too little to wear it. And I remember thinking, I don't want this thing. Like, why would I want this thing?
I'm so sweet.
But when I got older, because my mom said it literally was made to protect you. So it has nothing to do with me. So as I got older, you figure out what she meant by that. But at first I was like, ew, I don't want this thing. And no, I have it. And I don't wear it. The horn, my grandmother had horns as well. My grandmother had all of these things, really.
Oh, the cornos?
Yeah.
The little red peppers?
Yeah, yeah. Hers were not red, though.
My favorite part, he said they do them in like gold or silver sometimes. My favorite is the hands. And nobody can see me, but I'm doing like hook 'em horns, which is only for sports people, but like bull horns. And I guess Italians do it.
Yeah.
And you say Italian words and it means to like if you don't have an amulet, you can do it with your hands. And I'm like, that's freaking genius. That's so smart to have like something you could do real quick.
Yeah. The Eye of Horus is also a protection. The Hamza, the Hand of Fatima. What else? I mean, there's so many.
There are a lot of different
amulets
and talismans. Some of them are going to be obvious. You're going to look at them and be like, oh, yeah, okay. The evil eye, understood.
Right.
I was not expecting Om to be in there. I was not expecting that would be something that is for the evil eye, but like when I read what he writes, I'm like, oh yeah, that works. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. He also talks about car protection, which I thought was funny because I do something for my car.
Yeah.
And I remember somebody who listens to us wrote in and was like, I got a new car. Is there anything that I could do? And I was like, I got you, girl. Like, I do something.
So many things. Oh my God. One of my friends is Italian, right? Like I think her mom is off the boat or her grandparents, but she like speaks Italian. They speak Italian in the home. And so for them, it's very important that you put the coins in the back of the car. There's an Italian word for it. I don't remember what it is. She said it and I still don't remember it. But she got her car detailed and the guys, I guess, thought they were being nice and they took all the coins and put them in the front seat, like in the cup holder. So she had to, after she got her car detailed, throw the coins back in the back of the car, like, get my luck back.
Oh my God.
God. I mean, I get it. If you're detailing a car and you find all these coins on the floor, you're like, oh, I'm gonna clean that up for you.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're a superstitious person, you gotta put them back.
Wow. So the second quote comes in chapter 4, which is what we're up to now.
Yes.
How to diagnose the evil eye. And the quote is, spiritual knowledge leads to spiritual practice, and spiritual practice is an invincible force. And I loved that.
Yeah.
So.
But also, sometimes, and I think some of us know this intimately, sometimes you got to stop getting spiritual knowledge and just start doing spiritual practice.
Yeah. I feel attacked right now.
Sometimes you just got to, I mean, it's also me, but the problem is it's me in every aspect of my life. I'm just constantly like, I'm going to learn about this and then never do it.
Yeah.
Can I read you my quote?
Yeah.
From this chapter? Because it fucked me right up. When we label occult pseudoscience or dismiss strange phenomena altogether, we are not only accepting that bad stuff happens, we're permitting it and even opening up doors to more of it. And I think like your quote and my quote together almost demand that people accept a spiritual reality. And that's like, even as a witch who's been running a witchcraft podcast for like 6 years, that's a hard pill to swallow. Like you must accept a spiritual reality.
Yeah. I think because one of the things about being a witch is always questioning everything that we're doing.
Yeah.
So to be told you have to accept, it's like, okay, technically I do, but don't push me.
Like, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah. Tell me what to do, but don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
So this is all about how to diagnose it. So in case you're wondering, I'll break it down for you. One, look at the luck you're having. Is it bad? They don't mean like one day, I fell down the stairs, which I did in the winter. Actually, I had a winter where I kept going down the stairs because it just kept being icy. But okay, so somebody might have said, oh, the evil eye. I was thinking, no, I'm not paying attention when I'm going down the stairs. The minute I started paying attention, guess who stopped falling? Me, right? Next thing, look for physical manifestations. Do you have bruises? Okay, here's the other thing. Falling, eye twitch. Have we discussed my eye twitch?
Like, have we discussed my eye twitch?
Oh, you have an eye twitch too?
Oh my God, yeah. Regularly.
Yeah. When I'm really stressed out. So it's been a lot better this school year. Like, I barely have it. When I have it, I just feel like my whole eye is like, everyone can see it. But
that's so funny that it's been better for you.
It hasn't been better for you?
No, but you're right. It is very much like, if I'm stressed or if I'm not sleeping, thank you, baby bat. I get the eye twitch and I'll just sit there with my finger over my one eye to like make it chill out. But at no point am I ever like, oh, that's the evil eye. I'm like, I should do less.
Yeah. Then the next thing is psychological manifestations, anxiety, panic attacks, nightmares. Okay. Again, stress. Because, I mean, do I have anxiety? Yes. Do I have nightmares? I had one last night. I'm not thinking it's the evil eye. I just think that I'm a little stressed out. It's the end of the year. And if you – I don't know what it's like in the lower levels, but for the high school, there's a lot of stuff we got to do. So,
because this is my thing, right? I feel like I should have this is so stupid now that I feel like I should have had the evil eye at some point.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like I'm a witch and I'm 86 years old. Like, I feel like at some point I should have had it.
And you have a big mouth.
It feels like the flu. Do you know what I mean? And I have a big mouth. And also sometimes I just say shit without really thinking about it first, or I say shit and then I've changed my mind like 30 minutes later. So I just feel like I should have had it.
Yeah, I feel I should have had COVID too, but I haven't gotten it. So yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
There you go.
I really liked when we were looking at the manifestations, he talks about looking at bed sheets and if there's a tear in your bed sheets, especially if you live with a significant other, that could be a sign of the evil eye. I was like, that's such a unexpected thing. Like, I would never expect a sheet to tear in the first place. So for me, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to keep an eye out for that.
Okay, but also, how old are your sheets? Do sheets tear? I'm sure they tear right. Like anything else. So if you're using your sheets, you're washing sheets, wash, dry. You know the dryer destroys everything.
Yeah, but I like it.
No, so do I. I'm not going to put my laundry outside. But I'm just saying, I think it's possible. I haven't had that situation. But if it did, I wouldn't freak out. I would just think, unless they were like new, then I would just say, these were crappy sheets.
So, but here's the thing. I guess this is my problem. When I look at the list of manifestations, I'm like, yeah, I've had a bunch of those.
Me too.
And some of them even like back to back. All when should I be like, I have the evil eye?
Okay, so according to all the examples that he gave, because I was thinking that too, but every time he had examples, it wasn't like bed sheets ripped and then they fell and that was it. It was like, it doesn't stop. It goes on for quite a while and it manifests in all sorts of ways. So when he was talking about the couple at one point, it was like things were breaking in the house. They were fighting. They were losing things. One of them fell. So it's like, no, like you definitely know because it's like the worst.
All of it.
Yeah,
it's the worst
luck on the planet in all areas.
Oh, and it would actually make sense as a witch because I hope that the universe has imposed upon all witches, including those who are starting out, that working on protection and grounding is a really good first step for witchcraft. As someone who does things like protection and grounding, you would probably be less likely to get the evil eye. It's like wearing a mask for the evil eye. If the evil eye is COVID, protection and grounding is wearing a mask.
There you go. Plus, I also think most witches wear something for protection.
Yeah.
And on the days that I don't, because I forget and I leave it at home, and that's happened to me. And then I panic and then I go, wait a minute. Again, we ground, we center, we do protection. Mm-hmm. So even without the amulet, we still should be okay. So he talks about how to actually, you know, if you're going to cure the evil eye, now that you've diagnosed it, you know somebody has it, he talks about just that ground and center. Ask yourself, why do you want to learn to practice this kind of magic? Am I ready to assume the responsibilities that come with it? And then bless your hands so that you can heal. And then he goes into methods of diagnosing the evil eye.
I want to do the egg thing so bad. I just think I have heard about it so many times. My kids come in and be like, Miss, I did the egg. And I have actually, prior to reading this book, have had students come in and be like, I did the egg and I have the evil eye and now I have to go do a cleanse. And I'm like, that sounds so fun. That sounds so fun to have a cool Bruja aunt who does the egg for you. I want that.
So he talks about that. Then he talks about how to cure the evil eye. And he goes through a bunch of things. And one of the things he talked about was Athena.
My girl. My girl, so my girl.
What did you think about seeing her there?
I love her. I really liked. I know that. I knew that the evil eye was in Greek culture. I really only knew about it through Greek orthodoxy. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was really exciting to be like, oh, shit, I know her. For me, it was more accessible. And obviously, you know, I fuck with Athena, so.
Yeah. And he also talks about So he gives you a bunch of prayers and things you can do to work with the, you know, getting rid of the evil eye. He also talks about things you should mm-hmm. have in your pantry. He doesn't say, he says you don't necessarily have to separate things. So, you know, if you're using olive oil for something, you don't have to buy separate olive oil for it, but you should just be yes. aware of where everything is. And then he ends with how to cast the evil eye. And I thought we could spend some time on that.
Yes, I think it's, first of all, I just like that. You know, like, I just like that he's like, you know what, fuck it. Here's how you do it. Because you could have left it out. You could have.
Yeah.
You didn't, and I appreciate that, but you could have.
You know, and here's the thing for me. The minute I started reading that chapter, my first thought went to, I don't know if that I should know this. Because.
Ditto.
I just felt like there are so many adults that make me crazy on the daily that I don't know this is something I need yeah. to know. But, and maybe this is the third quote, he says, when witches and other magical practitioners cast justified curses, we are restoring balance to our own lives and to the cycle of life itself. And I think that's the best way that I've ever read anybody talk about hexing.
I huge agree. Yeah. Yes. We know I'm pro-hexing.
Yeah.
This is the reason I shouldn't know this is because I don't need anything else added to my arsenal.
Especially,
I'm going to do it accidentally now.
You know, and that's the other thing. I want to go back to that because we kind of like sped through the book for, because I don't know, I just started talking about different things. But the accidental thing, I don't want to say I don't believe what he's saying, because obviously I mean, I do. I think that he knows what he's talking about. But the minute someone says something, right? And mm-hmm. you feel a twinge of something, that's not accidental.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do the shadow work. Why are you upset? Because I've always felt, in all honesty, yeah. that there's no reason for anybody to be jealous of anybody. Like, no one should be jealous of me. The fact that people are jealous of me, I think, is ridiculous, because I don't have anything that's unattainable. Do you know what I mean?
I actually love that this is, yes.
If I had, I don't know, what could I have? If I was lucky enough, there was one genie in a bottle and I'm the only person on the planet who has it. Yeah, I think I'd be jealous of the person who had the one genie in a bottle. But what people have...
My relationship with jealousy is not... Like, I don't... How do I want to explain this? If I am jealous of someone, I am aware that that is a me problem, and I am upset with myself for being jealous.
There you go.
So I don't think that I could functionally ever actually cast an evil eye, because for me, if I'm like, and fuck it, when I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous of that person, what the fuck, Gemini, stop it. Right? So I can't look at somebody and be like, ugh, I'm jealous of you. I hope like your life falls apart. I can look at somebody and be like, you're a fucking dick and an asshole, and I hope your life falls apart. Right. But like, I can't be mad at you. I'm mad at me for being mad at you.
Right.
Yeah. And I almost wish that it was like a bigger part of the book now that we're talking about it, because your relationship with jealousy is probably more important in your relationship with the evil eye yes. than anything else.
And I think that's some shadow work that you should do. I mean, I think that that's one of the things that I like about this book, is that I feel that it makes you delve into that part of yourself.
Yeah. 'Cause
we all get jealous of something at some point. So,
yeah.
You know, like you said, what's the relationship? What are you really jealous of?
What a question. What are you really jealous of? Damn.
I mean, I'm not saying that everybody, you know, and when we say this, it comes from a point of privilege, because we live good lives, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about somebody who has just lost everything and it's like, wow, I wish I had my house again, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's different. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you have a decent life. Nothing is stopping you from having a decent life, because there are people out there who can't do that.
Yeah.
Right? They have people that are being stopped from being able to live humanely. Forget even decently. Humanely. Then that'll be a whole different podcast. So
we do not have time.
We don't have time. Okay? We're sticking with the evil eye right now. So if you're just talking about just regular folks, what are you jealous about? You know? I've seen people, I mean, this happened to me when we moved in here, and 6 months later my cousin comes over and she's like, you know, you could sell the house. It's like, then where would I live? She goes, but it's really good now. You could buy a bigger house. I said, who's coming to live with me? Like, what is this idea that I have to have? She decided to downsize when her kids got older. Her idea of downsizing, the house is gigantic. Guess what? Her knees are bad and she has all these stairs. What are you doing? Do you know what I'm saying? This is another jealousy. And to me, that's putting the evil eye on yourself. Because you, right, are so jealous of people who have a bigger house, a different layout of a house. So now you go out and you buy it. Guess what? She can't even get up on her bed because she bought this really high bed. She has difficulty around that house. Are you enjoying the house? No, you're stupid. You just evil eyed yourself.
I think American society evilize us.
Yes. Yeah.
That's so, because, okay, one of our mutual friends finally built her house and posted pictures of it on the internet. And I was like, oh my God, this is the most beautiful thing in the world. Mm-hmm. This is a gorgeous house. I would never want to live in it because it's huge. It's, you know, like, I could never clean that whole thing. Her closet is gigantic. I would fill it up and never find anything. But I had to warn Mr. Gemini. I had to be like, don't get a complex about how big this house is. Our house is perfect. Because we live in a world that told us, American society tells us, you have to have the bigger house. You have to have the nicer house. That's how you prove you're worth it. You have to have all this stuff. That's how you prove you've made it. And, like, that's not the point. Our ancestors were not out here inventing the concept of the evil eye because somebody had a mansion and they really wanted to have two cars instead of one car. They were hungry. Right? They were scared. We in the position that we're in as Americans or as people in other countries like that, I'm thinking like the UK, people who have the privilege to be comfortable, when we're so caught up in like, what do we have? What do I have that my neighbor doesn't have? What does my neighbor have that I don't have? We're not people. We're just little consumer robots. And then I get to say, eat the rich.
And specifically?
Capitalism is a plague. Oh, yeah. Jeff Bezos. Make a burger out of him.
You have not said that in forever. So this is like,
it's such a long time.
Yeah, since year one. But it's true. We do that to ourselves. And I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks about my house. I'm comfortable in it. I'm the one who has to live in it. And I don't care.
Yeah.
But there are people like that. I had a friend who wanted to have this big house. And then she could never afford to fix anything in it. Window broke in her living room.
That sucks. Houses are so expensive.
This huge window that she had in her living room. She had like a tape on it because it had cracked and she couldn't afford to fix it. I said, you have two small children. Do you allow them in the living room? Like, what are you doing? Like, why did you buy this gigantic house? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because it's what people expect. Or what kind of car do you drive? Yeah, I see it all the time. Like, there was somebody at our job. They retired a while ago. Her dream was to have a BMW.
That's not even that hard.
That's what I said. I don't get it. So, but it's the things that we do. And then we're worried and maybe rightfully so, that someone's going to be so jealous of the fact that you got this BMW.
Yeah. There are very few things in my life that I care that much about. And, like, when I think about what are the things that I'm taking out of the house in a fire, my most expensive objects are not on the list.
Right. Right.
At all.
Yeah. I'm saving my action figures in case anybody was wondering.
I don't know. I honestly, I don't know if there is a single physical object that I care that much about. I don't think I have anything in my home that is, like, so sentimental. And that, you know what? I got that from my dad, though, because he's very much the kind of guy that's like, there's nothing I can't replace. There's nothing I can't replace except your life.
No, that's true. I think that we just get really comfortable. I mean, for me, I have photographs of my family that I can't replace. And
yeah,
that would hurt me to not be able to look at those photographs ever again, especially if hopefully I live a long life. I think, and maybe I should probably just digitize all the photos, have them in the cloud, and then I could look at them whenever I want. You know, is what I should do.
Yeah, but keep the physical ones because we're in a digital dark age. There's so much information on the internet.
No, that's true.
One day historians are going to find your pictures and it's going to be cool. And I love that. So, like, keep the physical ones too.
No, I know about that. But I'm just saying, like, if there was a fire, you know, that would hurt.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Would I feel like I needed them? No, but it would definitely hurt. And I think that's the thing that people really get hurt about. Like, things you can replace. But there are some things that are so personal and you can't replace them. You know, like my parents' wedding photo. That'd be lost forever.
Yeah.
You know? So, but for the most part, I think that the evil eye is very much alive and well. You know, in Spanish, you also have a saying that says, te tengo envidia de la buena. And what that means is I envy you in a good way. And I have that. Like I said that to somebody, not in Spanish, but I said it to them. Somebody in my department is retiring. And, you know, her husband has a house in Italy. So they get to travel. Their kids are grown. So it's not like they have to worry about the kids. The kids are doing great. And, you know, she's getting a chance to now be able to go do stuff. And, you know, I hugged her and, you know, I said, I can't believe you're leaving. But, you know, I envy you, like, in a good way. Like, to me, it's like, I want to hear good things. I want to hear that her retirement is going great. Because that feeds me. Because it's like, well, one day it's going to be me. And I get to be that person that has a really good retirement and is able to enjoy family and enjoy time. So I don't think that all jealousy is bad. I think it depends on how you feel about it. Like, I'm not like, that bitch, she's retiring. I'm just like, this is so good. Like, you get to do this. Like, go enjoy yourself.
It's the difference between, like, if she has it, then I can't have it.
Right.
Versus if she has it, I can get it too.
Right. That's how I feel, you know? And I think, but I also think that comes from examining your jealousy, because, like, you know, why am I jealous? And I realized, oh, I wish it was me, but it's going to be me one day.
I want that.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm not angry and I don't wish her bad. Like, it would break my heart if I found out that she was having a terrible time at retirement, because you work so hard for so long that to think that people are miserable in retirement, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear happy stories.
Yeah.
So, but so how do I feel about this book as far as witches? Should you get this book? If you have a curiosity about the evil eye or anything like this, I say yes. If you're thinking about protection, I think there's another reason why you should get the book, because you don't know where an attack might come from. And lastly, it's just so different from anything else I've seen out there. And he mentions other books on the evil eye. But as far as a magical book, this is the only thing that I've ever seen like it. I love the way it's written. And I think you would get a lot out of it. So I think it's something, it's, I said to Gemini before we started, I don't know that I want to give away this book. I think I want to keep this for a while because I'm really enjoying it. And I want to, like, take some notes for myself on a couple of things there.
Yeah. I purchased I guess it would be an amulet to hang up in my vestibule, because I found, like, this glass piece that has, like, a big evil eye on it. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, in the center and the whole rest of the piece is a peacock.
Ooh.
So I wouldn't have even looked if it weren't for this book. So I'm really excited about it. I'm going to hang that up for Hera, and then I'm going to put a horseshoe up, obviously, to protect from the fairies. So not only is this book a really good read and like very interesting and very easy to get through, it, unlike many of the books that we read, it actually did something in my practice.
Mm. For me, it just gave me context for a lot of the things that I know we talked about in my family. And
yeah.
Did I ever expect to see an Asabache in there? No. I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, ditto.
So the fact that it was there was just kind of like, hey, that's cool. Like, yeah, I guess that was the evil eye, or I don't know. I guess sometimes you just don't think about it. You're just like, oh, it's protection. Oh, it keeps bad things away. Well, what's the bad thing? The evil eye. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I recommend it. I think it's great. People should get it. And let us know what you think if you have read it. Because I'm always curious.
Yeah, absolutely. I also really loved reading the stories about people getting the evil eye. So if you had the evil eye at any point and you want to like shoot us a message about what it was like, I'm just nosy.
Yeah.
I'm just nosy.
If you normally get rid of the evil eye, that's something that you do. I'd like to know about that too.
Oh, yes.
Do you work with that?
I would love to talk to a little old Italian lady.
Okay.
I would love to get a little old Italian lady on here to talk about Italian folk magic.
So if anybody has an Italian grandma who does folk magic and they would like to be on the podcast, also let us know, because I think that'd be cool.
Preferably one who speaks English.
Well, yeah. Well, why?
Listen.
I mean, we can't.
Because I don't speak Italian.
No, I don't mean that. But why can't the grandchild also come on and, or your mom comes on and you translate for
that's
your
fair
mom.
I will accept someone with a translator. That's totally fine.
Yeah, let her speak Italian. Damn, I'll do her thing. We can get just someone's got to come on and translate. That would be cool. Do we talk about the book for the next month for people who want to?
We are supposed to. Yes.
I think we forgot about this one.
We did a little like flip-a-rooney with this book and the next book.
So the book for next month, people who want to read ahead, is Hades, Myth, Magic, and Modern Devotion by Jamie Wagoner. So if you wanted to read ahead, that's the book that we're going to be doing. Kind of exciting, because we're going to be able to delve into, well, we're delving into Gemini's world, but and we're talking about Hades. I kind of feel like I'm in there somewhere.
I'm very excited about it.
Anything dark. So yeah, that's what we're doing.
Thank you so much for being an amazing audience, for giving us the opportunity to keep doing what we love doing. Thank you to Kano and Moore for our amazing intro and outro music. And remember, if you're following the moons,
you're following us.